Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Listen, here's the thing. The white pelicans, do you remember that just a few months ago, and it seems like just weeks ago, we were celebrating the arrival of the white pelicans in Mobile. They come in September, October, these gigantic birds, in huge squadrons of them. They come into Mobile. It's the signal that hot weather is done. That the really hot nights are gone. That we're going to be entering a drier time of year. We're going to get less rain. It's a signal that the hurricanes are almost done. Maybe not quite, but almost. And that winter's coming and that we have that beautiful fall season and that they're going to be here right up until now. And here it is. I can't believe it. It's almost time. I think we're beginning to see the squadrons of white pelicans leaving. They're going to be gone. It's amazing how quickly that happens. You know, if we lived in Mobile and only in Mobile, and the only world we knew was Mobile, and we couldn't see outside Mobile at all, we'd think these birds came from heaven, that they just suddenly appeared out of heaven every year about October, and then spent their time here and then left. And we would think they were solely ours. They were just ours. They belonged only to us. This is where they live. This is where they are. But, you know, here's the funny thing. So in a few weeks, somebody up in northern Wisconsin or in Manitoba or Saskatchewan is going to see those white pelicans coming in. And they're going to think, our white pelicans are back. They belong to us. They're our white pelicans. They must come from heaven. Heaven sends them every year in late April, just for us. And they'll be here until September, when they ascend into the skies again, into the heavens, to wait. That's the way it is, isn't it? That's the way it is. So these are birds that move back and forth, and where do they belong? I don't know. I think they belong in both places. They spend 6 months here, 6 months there. I think they claim both places, not because they were born there, or not because, you know, it's not, there's no, I think they do nest in Canada, but does that mean they belong to Canada because they were born up there, or do they belong to Mobile? I think they belong in both places. It doesn't matter where they were born. It matters that they know both places. They know how to make use of both places, and they do. And they find both places to their liking. They moved to make it work. It's an interesting story. You know, it's happening not just with the pelicans. It's happening with all of these tropical birds that come in. They're nesting here. They're going to be in April. They're going to be in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of tropical birds are going to be coming into the Gulf of Mexico and up the Gulf. And they're going to be nesting here. They're going to be producing their young here, and then they're going to be fledging those young, and they're headed back. Same with the swallowtail kites. Swallowtail kites last week, I saw them come in. They were over the Mobile Botanical Gardens, a whole flock of them, nesting these swirls of swallowtails, looking for a place to nest. And then they'll move back to the tropics. Where do they belong? They belong in both places. It's an interesting thing. Interesting thing to think about. Interesting thing to see how they make use of different places in the world. And they belong to both places. I've been thinking about that. I don't know what it means. Exactly, except it's an interesting phenomenon of life around Mobile. Where do you, Where do you belong? What place do you belong to? Interesting question. I should ask the Swallowtails. I should ask the White Pelicans. Listen, while you're here in this place, it's time to start thinking about what you're going to do about this garden. So everybody's saying, am I too late? No, of course not. I mean, you've missed a window on some things. You missed the best window on a lot of things. You probably missed, I don't recommend planting kale anymore. I don't recommend planting broccoli anymore. It doesn't make any sense here. That's something we do in fall. It may be something you don't plant your sugar snaps now. That's something we do back in January and February. And maybe it's almost too late to plant your tomatoes unless you find a very short season. But there's plenty of other things ready to go. There's plenty of flowers ready to plant. And we can talk about those. It's still a great time. You can still plant shrubs. You just have to be attentive to watering because we're going to get a little bit of dry weather in April and May. We always do. And you need to watch out for that as the temperatures rise. But there's lots to plant. So what do you need to make all this work? And I've been thinking about that. You know, weeds are this thing that no one ever really, you know, we talk about. Well, just go plant. You know, why don't you make a big field? Make it really big. Make it, you know, as big as you can. Nobody tells you what you're going to do about the weeds. Now, the weeds will absolutely eat you alive. So what are you going to do about the weeds? Well, I've been thinking about that. Try to manage some gardens. I can't go out there and pull all the weeds all the time. I have to pull some weeds. You know, pulling weeds is one of those things that are part of garden. But, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great? Now, you help me on this. Help me figure this out. Because wouldn't it be great? This is what we know about weeds. We know that those weeds are going to germinate, that the seeds are going to sprout when they see sunlight. That's the way weeds are. And you're going to have a lot more weeds if you got bare ground. So help me here. Help me. What is it that I need? What can I put on that bare ground to keep the weeds from coming up? Can you help me here? And listen, here's the other thing. It's about to get warm. You know, it's about to get very warm. The soil's going to get warm. That means the soil is going to lose moisture very fast if it's exposed to the sun, right? Seeds are going to germinate. The soil is going to get moist, going to dry out very fast if it's exposed to sunlight too fast. The soil is going to be very warm for the plants. It's going to stress the plants. If the ground gets warm really fast, you know what happens? There's lots of things in the soil. Most of them are very good. There's lots of nice nematodes. But there's these nematodes. I have to use the word nematode. That's what we call them. They're microscopic little things. And they get into the roots of your plant, and they just tear those roots up, just eating those. And you know what? And when they do that, they leave holes. That means all kind of diseases get into your plant. So what? It's the warm soil that calls them to the surface, and they really proliferate when the soil is warm. So you got warm soil, you got soil that's drying out, you got soil that is going to be germinating weeds. So help me out. What can I do to stop all that? You tell me. I thought about this the other day. You tell me if it works. There's bags all over the street right now. There's bags all now. We would normally say, well, let's put a mulch on it. Let's put some leaves on it. But as you know, of course, leaves only fall in Mobile and on the Gulf Coast. They only fall in fall, in autumn. Isn't that what they're supposed to do? That's what they do in Austria. That must do the same thing here. You tell me about it. What's going on? What's happening that could make my garden work? Folks, there's leaves everywhere. They're in bags all over the street. If you want to solve most of your gardening problems, let me tell you, those leaves are incredible. They are gold. They are the solution. They do so many different things. I could talk to you about anything else you could do for your garden, but you could almost operate a garden with nothing but leaves. Nothing but leaves. It is the most important ingredient in a city like Mobile if you're gardening. Let's talk about why. Let's talk about how to use those leaves. I'm using them. I'm bringing them in. I'm bringing them in as many bags as I can find. My neighbor put them out, and he was very kind. He worked and sweated all day to rake those leaves up for me. And I thank him for it. Let's talk about it. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Look, we're going to talk about this leaf thing. We're going to talk about what leaves do. We're going to talk about why they work. We're going to talk about why they're so miraculous in the garden. They really are. It's an interesting story. We're going to get back to that. We're going to talk about that. But somebody sent me a picture, and you can send me a picture too. Feel free. It's really easy. 251-343-0106. You just take a picture, and then you send it to that phone number. You text it, and boom, it comes right here. And I get to see it, and we get to talk about it. And if you got a problem, or if you just want to brag, or if you want to say, what is this, or if you just want to show it off. So somebody sent me a picture, it's a lot of fun. You can follow along, too, with these pictures through our Flickr site, which you can get on our website. You can go on. You can see these pictures. They're really stunning sometimes. We get some beautiful pictures. And I didn't have my glasses on, and I'm looking at this picture that just came in, and I'm seeing this incredibly beautiful azalea. Here's a thing. I am looking at this picture of this azalea, and I'm thinking, I haven't seen azaleas. This is the way azaleas used to look. This is why Mobile was the azalea city. This azalea, let me tell you about this azalea I'm looking at. This azalea has got to be somewhere between 8 and 9 feet tall. It's probably 12 feet wide. It is unbelievable. But listen, it is a solid block of color. It is intense. It's the kind of thing you could see for half a mile, literally. It is stunning. It is beautiful. It is the kind of thing that everybody, if everybody says, man, what is an azalea supposed to do? This is what an azalea is supposed to do. This is why Mobile was famous. For generations, people would come to Mobile. They would drive to Mobile to see azaleas that look like this. It is a beautiful azalea. 8 feet tall, 12 feet wide. Just absolutely beautiful. And it's not interfering with a house. It's not interfering with, it's not in the way of the road. It's not in the way of a driveway. It's just sitting, there perfectly poised, this incredibly beautiful azalea. I'd love to see more of them like this. And the question I got was, I have an overgrown azalea. Any suggestions? Listen, folks, what have we done to ourselves? We've turned ourselves into a nation of dwarf plants or something. Everything has to be. Look, if nature gets one, if it's taller than my knee and it's natural, we got to kill it because it might eat me alive. Man, listen, that is a beautiful azalea. Please keep that azalea just the way it is. That is the way azaleas are supposed to be. Now, that's a southern Indian azalea. Let me tell you about this azalea. It's big. I wouldn't plant it next to the house because there's not going to be enough room right next to the house. It's the kind of thing, it's like a big hoop skirt out in the yard. It's beautiful. It's stunning. It's great. So, and you want that hoop skirt to have room to spread its skirt out all around, right? You know, you got a big hoop skirt. You don't want to try to force it down into a closet. So it needs space. It needs room. The only thing you can do to an azalea like that, you can't make it smaller. This is what I tell people about those Southern Indians. You can't really make them smaller and have them bloom. You can only make them look ugly. Sure, you can cut them back to the ground, but you know what's going to happen? In 3 years, they're going to be the same size. 2 or 3 years, they're going to be the same size. If you were to cut them to the ground every year, you'd pretty well destroy the azalea, which is what you'd have to do to keep them low, but then you wouldn't ever get any blooms, would you? Don't do that. It's a beautiful azalea. The one thing I would suggest about this azalea is that it needs companions. Plant a few more. Let them, give them, you see how big they get? You can plant some more. They'll be great. They'll be beautiful. You'll have the most spectacular yard anywhere with azaleas like that. I mean, they'll just be absolutely spectacular. It's a great thing to do. About every 15 or 20 years, an azalea that size may need cutting back, and it would need cutting back virtually all the way to the ground just to clean out the vines, clean out the trees, and to get rid of any funky diseases that might occur in the stems. But that's all it needs, and it's beautiful. It's great. It's great. So listen, that azalea is not overgrown. I know that this is the impression that modern gardens are supposed to give, but this was, go back and look at those pictures of Mobile. These were the azaleas that people were proud of. It was the azaleas that they stood in front of to get their picture taken with the whole family and the new baby. It was an amazing thing. It's what, when people got engaged, they stood in front of these azaleas. When they got married, they stood in front of these azaleas because these said, This is the beauty of Mobile. This was the beauty of Mobile. It's a beautiful thing. Leave that azalea alone. What is the best peach and pear trees for citronelle? The pear trees, I'm ready for you. Let's talk about the pear trees just a minute. There are people who like hard pears. There are a lot of hard pears out there. And sand pears that are gritty and grainy, and they can be good. There's nothing wrong with those, and a lot of people like them. A lot of people like them to eat. They can be good to eat. From a classic pear standpoint, the two pears, however, that I would recommend that have incredible flavor, incredible concentrations of sugar, that aren't too grainy, aren't too hard, that grow very well, they're fairly available in Alabama still, thanks to the guys from Petals from the Past, would be the Warren pear, W-A-R-R-E-N, the Warren pear, and the Ayers pear, A-Y-E-R-S, Ayers, whichever you prefer, A-Y-E-R-S, Warren and Ayers. They're great companions because they flower at about the same time, and they do some cross pollination, which can increase your production a little bit with both of those pears. And if you only have one, there it's okay too. But Warren and Ayers are to me, if I had to name two pears, those would be the peak. They are perfect for citronelle. They probably would do okay in Mobile as well. But citronelle and North, I can guarantee you they're going to be the best. You know, peaches are a real trial. And I'll just have to say, there are a lot of peaches that are a real trial. You have to be very careful with peaches, not only because there are lots of diseases. There are lots of diseases that affect them and lots of insects, lots of borers. So they can need regular spraying, but a lot of people, to keep them looking really perfect, you need regular spraying. And you also have to be careful about winter chill with peaches, very careful with winter chill. You have to match the peach, with the climate. So if you were to plant a peach that was developed for Michigan down here, it would never flower and never fruit. And this is happening to a lot of people, I'm sure, this year in Mobile. Their peaches are not going to do that well because we didn't get enough chill hours. And this is a big problem. So what do you do? There are a lot of them out there. I can tell you some of the old-fashioned varieties that I think are very tasty and that are very good and that I would try. La Feliciana. La Feliciana, like the parish in Louisiana, is a great peach, and you can still find it. It's still around. It's a really delicious peach. I think it would be perfectly matched to citronelle. Another one is Suwannee, which I've tried to grow in my yard in Mobile. It did very well, but it didn't quite get enough chill hours there. I think it would be perfect for citronelle. Suwannee peach, it's spelled like the river in Florida, not like the college in Tennessee. Suwannee peach, very good. If you get into, so those are two very good ones. I can think of a few more if you give me enough time, but that's two good ones to start with. And they're a little bit of variety in those. One is a kind of a whitish peach. One is a traditional orange peach. Both very good. If you get into things like Bella Georgia and some of the other peaches that are grown in North Alabama, you're going to have a hard time even in citronelle because you're not going to have enough chill hours. But I hope that helps. If that doesn't start it for you, you give me a call and we'll talk a little bit more about it. So Dan is asking, what kind of peaches do the orchards down in Irvington grow? And I don't know. I hadn't asked him. They're probably growing commercial varieties. You know, one of the reasons I don't recommend that you follow the lead of commercial growers is that they're growing peaches. It almost doesn't make sense because their peaches are not necessarily more disease resistant. Sometimes they may be, sometimes not. But there's another problem. They're growing them for shipping. And let's talk about what that means. You want to pick another variety for your home. We'll be back.
Cornbread and butter beans, and you cross the table. Eating beans and making love as long as I am able. Growing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love again all over. Goodbye, don't you cry, I'm going to Louisiana. The Baccoon dog gonna pick that hog and marry Susiana. Sing song, ding dong, I'll take a trip to China.
Awfully far.
Cornbread, butter beans, then back to North Carolina.
That's all right.
And cornbread, butter beans, and you cross the table. Eating beans.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You may be getting prepared to build a garden. And that's a good thing. Let me start you off with some thoughts about gardening and how it works. You hear from a lot of people about what you need for a garden. You hear, oh, it's you got a fertilizer, you got to have lime, you got to have a weed killer, the bugs are gonna. None of that's the issue, really. Let me tell you what's central. What is central to understanding what you need to make a garden? And that is good soil. And good soil is not about the fertilizer. We use fertilizers because we don't have good soil. And so we kind of try to grow plants hydroponically, and it doesn't work. But fertilizer doesn't create good soil. In fact, it sort of makes things worse for your soil. And here's the thing. If your plants, Let's put it down to something basic. If your plants don't have enough oxygen in the root zone and enough water in the root zone, and that means having a lot of space in the root zone, a lot of pore space. It's not just the particles you're interested in. It's the space between the particles that's very important. If there's not enough space between those particles, then plants can't grow there. I don't care how much fertilizer you add. I don't care how much lime you add. I don't care what you do. Those plants are not going to grow because the roots will rot. Or they may never develop. Or they're going to die from drought. Or they're going to die from excess moisture, which when you think about it, both things happen when there's not any space between those little soil particles. So what do you do to get in there? How do you pull those little soil particles apart? Well, you can't. But there are tens of thousands of creatures who are in the soil who will fix that soil for you so that it's perfect for plants. But they cannot do it unless the soils are like the soils were that we first found when we came to Alabama, like those virgin soils. What were those soils like? They were dark, they were black, they were rich all over the state, and what they had was organic matter. It's the organic matter that makes the topsoil. It's the organic matter, the leaves, the decomposing leaves, the decomposing pieces of wood, the beetle carcasses, all those things get together, and they are the things that the soil creatures use to keep that soil right, to keep it open. It's the way it's been done for half a billion years. So you can't change that. That's the way plants work. And I, you know, somebody here's how intimately plants have adapted themselves to dealing with things like leaves. Plants like to grow in a chemistry, in a chemistry. Let's just call it that, of pH range of about 6 to 7, 6 to 6.5, really. That's on this pH scale. Just keep those numbers in mind. Keep those numbers in mind. Without organic matter, our soils are generally have a pH of around somewhere between 4.5 and 5.5, way below the level that most plants like growing, way too low for them to make use of the nutrients that are in the soil because the soil is so acidic, so acid, that they have a hard time using the kind of key nutrients. So I'm telling you to put leaves on your beds. Why would I tell you to do that? Because aren't leaves acidic? No, they're not acidic. You know what happens when leaves break down? What happens when leaves break down into soil, which happens very quickly here, very rapidly. Within a year, most leaves are going to break down. What is the pH? What is the chemistry? What is the pH of those leaves when they break down? Remember that number I told you about the number about the pH that plants like to grow in, 6 to 6.5? You know what the pH of leaves is when they break down? 6 to 6.5. How did that happen? What in the world is going on? How does it all mesh together so well? Well, it's a long relationship. It's a long relationship that plants and these decomposing leaves and decomposing wood parts have and beetle carcasses and all of the other things that go into the soil that make topsoil, that make organic matter, it's a long relationship that they've had. And so you can't really change that. We now have limestone that we buy from goodness knows where, and we put that on and say, well, you know, we're going to try to raise the pH that way, artificially. Well, okay. But if you don't understand the basics of soil, you're going to have big problems. Now, here's the cool thing about leaves. Don't dig them in. Please don't dig them in. I don't know how this got started. We have the action of soil creatures is so fast here that they are going to move those decomposing leaves, they're going to move it through the soil. And it's not just earthworms. They're things you don't see. They're things you don't want to remember the names for, things you don't want to even know about probably. But they're in the soil, and they're moving stuff through the soil all the time. So as that's decomposing, you don't have to dig it in because they're going to move it through the soil. And it's better to let them do it for a lot of reasons, a lot of reasons. Just let that happen. It's all you got to do. And don't dig it in. And you know what else, what's good about not digging it in? Because you know this weed problem that I was telling you about that all gardeners have? If you leave those bags of leaves that are out there right now, because this is when leaves fall here on the Gulf Coast. They fall in March, don't they? That's the big leaf season because of the live oaks. If you leave them on the surface, it smothers the weeds. The weeds never have a chance to germinate because they can't see the sun, and weed seeds need to see the sun to germinate. Now, if you have a something under there that's already germinated and it's already growing up, a little tree or something under there, well, of course, it's going to grow up through it, maybe. But if you know, in a lot of places, I can actually smother out even the tree sprouts by putting those leaves on there if I put them on big enough. Let's talk about that. It is so important right now. Those leaves are out there. This is the time that people are cleaning up their yards because this is the big leaf fall season. Let me know if you have any questions about how this works. It's very easy to do. It's really simple. It's a great way to have a garden. And it makes it not only means that your plants are going to grow like they've never grown before. It's going to solve 90% of the problems that we have in our gardens. It's amazing. Amazing thing. But it's going to make it really easy for you. And it's going to make you want to garden more because you're going to say, man, look what I did. It works. It works really well. Now, in fact, folks who've done this before, give me a hand here. You call in and tell folks how well this has worked for you because it is the secret to gardening. You know, I still run into people who say, ooh, I got to get these leaves out of my yard. It's not good for my plants. I don't know where that came from. It's a crazy idea. I shouldn't say that out loud, but it's wrong. And it's wrong. These leaves are key. So if you've got azalea, if you've got leaves growing under your azaleas, those leaves under your azaleas, don't rake them out. Man, that's the best soil in the whole world. It really breaks down really, really fast. So give us a call this morning. Let's talk a little bit more about those leaves. So we got lots of other things. Tony's sending me pictures of things sprouting. That's good to know, Tony. You're right, Tony. You got some camellia sprouting. Josh sent me a picture of his azaleas, and you know, this is one of those situations, Josh, where he's got an azalea. It's gotten pretty old. It's gotten pretty ragged for a lot of reasons. It can happen after about 15 years, and I'd say that's probably about a 15 to 20 year old azalea, is my guess. Look, Josh, here's what you do. Right now, go in and cut that azalea to the ground. Cut it to the ground. Don't be shy. Cut it all to the ground. Cut it right off to where you've got stobs about 6 inches tall. Clean all that out. Clean out all the weeds. Just let the weeds, watch the weeds as they come up. Clean out all of those vines. If you have any problem cleaning out the vines, let me tell you about how to do it. Give them a little bit of cottonseed meal just to give them a good start. And that azalea, that ugly azalea, will be stunningly beautiful by the middle of next summer. It'll grow 5 or 6 feet this year. And it'll make all the difference. Sometimes when azaleas get really old, you get weeds in them, they get pruned badly, different things can happen, and there's some funk diseases of the trunk funk, that begins to affect those azaleas. And the only way to get rid of trunk funk is to cut those azaleas back so that the diseases in the trunk don't get into the crown And it'll be fine. And then it'll sprout new. The new growth is completely resistant to trunk funk. So you don't have that problem. And that's something you only need to do about once every 15 years. Josh, if you've got any questions about how that works, you just give me a call and we'll talk about it. We'll figure out how to get it done this morning. Lots of interesting subjects to talk about this morning. So give us a call. I know a lot of you are trying to get your garden started, trying to make things work, and we're here to help you. But keep that consideration in mind. Dan, when we come back, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about this peach thing. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to follow up on, including some questions we had from last week. Let me, if this person's still out there, they were asking me about a big kumquat. And I could not remember the name of it. It's a kumquat relative. It's a member of that kumquat genus. And except this one has a really large fruit. It's large for a kumquat. The fruit is softer. Some people like it better than traditional kumquats. Some people don't like it as much. But it's a good fruit. It's a grapefruit. That fruit is called fukushu. Sorry, I couldn't remember that off the top of my head. Fukushu. Fukusha, and it's a great one. I did look around to see who was selling fukushu, and I found a number of small plants for $80. Good heavens, I can't see that. It's hard to move citrus around because of citrus diseases now, and that partly explains it. But $80 is a little much. Fukushu, maybe we can work on getting John Olive to grow some fukushu. John Olive at Auburn has been very good about growing our citrus for us in these times when it's hard to ship citrus around. And if we can get him to grow fukushu, be very careful about where you get your citrus from, or you may be importing a disease that will – it's not a disease that you can do anything about. It will wipe out your citrus, our citrus, my citrus, everybody's citrus if you bring in these diseases, and there is not a thing you can do about them. You can't spray them. You can't coax them through it. These are deadly citrus diseases. They are citrus diseases which we do not have any practical means to control. Please be careful. Green Dragon is out there. Be careful about the kinds of plants you bring in and where you buy them from. But fukushu is that plant. It's a great one. The person who sent me the picture of the azalea said, boy, all I've done to make that beautiful azalea that I bragged about how beautiful it was just rake the leaves under it every year. There it is. It's incredible. It does incredible things. That organic matter for azaleas is really important. It's one of the reasons why azaleas used to look so good, and they don't look so good anymore. And Dan, I want to get back. I just want to clarify something about – Dan was saying, what are they growing in the orchards, the commercial orchards in Irvington? And some of the varieties may be very good for you. But just as a word of warning, the varieties that Auburn and other groups promote for commercial growing – they are varieties that are designed to have hard skins that are easy to move around and that are easy to ship. And if you've been somewhat disappointed by some of the commercial varieties, even from Alabama, that have been on the market and for sale now, because you thought, God, these have a funny texture, a kind of rubbery, kind of, no, where's the flavor? It's because we're increasingly developing varieties that are good for commercial production. Generally, the species that are good for home production are very different than the ones that are good for commercial production. Sometimes we learn from what commercial growers are doing. Sometimes we benefit from that, and sometimes we don't. La Feliciana is an old style. It's old, but it's a great one. Suwannee, it's an old and great one. There's some others from the panhandle of Florida that I need to get hold of. I think they have a lot of potential. And then there are some that are traditional to the panhandle of Florida. And Just Fruits and Exotics, if you're looking for peaches, Just Fruits and Exotics has a lot of great peaches that would be good for your yard. It's a catalog. You can go on the internet and find it, Just Fruits and Exotics. And then there's some low-chill peaches, which people in Mobile should consider more than people in Citronelle, but particularly low-chill peaches that are produced by the University of Florida and LSU and some other places that can be useful for us. There's a lot of them out there. Vanna, I'm listening. What's up?
I think you answered it when I was running into the other room.
Oh, dear.
Let the radio interrupt. The fukushu, is that the kumquat you suggested?
That is indeed the it's the fukushu. Right. Vanna, was it you who called me and asked me about
this?
Yes,
last week. Uh-huh.
Good. I couldn't remember. And so it is that variety is fukushu, and it looks like it's more teardrop shaped. The base of it is much wider, and it's kind of got a flattened base.
Hmm.
Doesn't it? The base is a little flat.
I'm looking at it on the internet. Yes.
Yeah, and it's with a little dimple in the bottom, but it's big and fat. Is that the one you had?
Big and fat. Well, they were fat. They were the biggest ones I've ever seen. What my friend shared with us, and they were wonderful.
But they were not round. They were oval.
Well, they were oval.
That's right.
Ovoid. But fat ovoid.
That's right. So I'm pretty sure we're looking at fukushu, and it's a great little. Now there are as nearly as I can tell, reading through the literature, there may be several strains of fukushu, which is not surprising, and each one has different qualities. It may be that fukushu has different qualities in different places depending on how it's grown. I'm not sure. But the fukushu that I've had from Mobile is very sweet and very nice. It is very oily. Which is interesting. It's one of the things which can make it very interesting. But it's a very interesting kumquat, and fukushu is the name.
I don't want to bring any citrus disease. I guess I could just wait for my seeds. But
that seems
like a very long time to wait for fruit. But
yeah, I think fukushu comes true from seed, and it will take a while. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to John Olive, as I said.
I've got plenty of seeds if he wants them.
Well, he wouldn't propagate it that way.
Oh,
so
okay.
What he'll do is he'll take cuttings and graft them.
I see.
And when you do that, that means that in 3 years you'll get fruit.
Okay. Well, I would like my name at the top of the list.
All right. So I'm going to talk to John Olive about it.
Or somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see if we can get some of those fukushu available for sale next spring.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Vanna. I'm glad you asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Some great notes from people. David Hubble is telling me that he's going to spend his afternoon getting last season's leaves into the vegetable beds after he finishes making his pepper jelly. He's also telling me that the citrus blooms this year are absolutely fabulous. It is true. I mean, there is. The citrus bloom this year is going to be incredible. I'm trying to think what could interfere with having a great citrus year. I hope that the temperatures are just about right. We need a little break in temperature. We need a little break in temperature in late August and September. We didn't get it last year, and I thought it affected the flavor. It's a subtle thing, but I thought it affected the flavor. So if we get that little break in temperature, just a little break, just a few degrees cooler at night, just a couple or 3 degrees cooler at night, going into September, and if we avoid a hurricane, which could tear these trees up, I hate to think about all the bad things, But a hurricane could tear these trees up with all this fruit on them. We're going to have a great citrus year. It's going to be a prime citrus year for most folks. It's just going to be great. I'm really excited. My clementines probably loaded up better than they've ever been loaded up. It's going to be good. Now, listen, folks, if you're going to see so many, you're going to see so many blooms. And what's going to happen is, 95% and 99.99% of those blooms are going to fall off. Do not be distressed. Do not be upset. That's what's supposed to happen. There is no way that all those, if it tried to produce fruit for all those blooms, it would kill the tree. So the tree is always sacrificing a lot of blooms, a huge percentage of blooms. To some degree, the degree of blooming is designed to attract, probably designed to attract pollinators, though it's not needed for some trees. But we'll be back. We got to take a big break, and we're gonna come back and talk about all these things. Josh, we're gonna talk a little bit more about your azaleas too.
I didn't see you there. I'm Bob, an apartment home at Legacy Oaks, and I'm so excited. My new family is coming by today to get acquainted. I just love having a family to take care of. A lot of folks have been coming in and out, getting me ready, you know, making sure that my gas, fireplace, and oven are ready. It's always cozy when my family gathers around the fireplace. I like to give my family plenty of room so everyone has their own space, but it's always nice when we get together in my large eat-in kitchen. And you know, Mom's gonna love the large bath. It's a great place to relax in a large jacuzzi garden tub. I'll even protect the family vehicles with an attached garage. And some of my second floor brothers and sisters even have private elevators. I'm kind of secluded in a large gated community in Spring Hill on DeRue Drive with lots of green space, but real convenient to shopping, restaurants, healthcare, and minutes from I-65. There's lots more I could tell you about the amenities here at Legacy Oaks. You know, clubhouse, swimming pool, fitness room. But you can find that out for yourself on the interweb at LegacyOaksApartmentHomes.com. Or you can always call Jimmy, she's real nice, and get a tour at 344-8099. Hey, gotta go. My new family's here. I hope I see you soon. Hey, family, welcome home!